You're listening to Radio MD. She's a chiropractic holistic physician, best-selling author, international speaker, entrepreneur, and talk show host. She's Dr. Suzanne Bennett. It's time now for Wellness for Life Radio. Here's Dr. Suzanne.
Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, aka ADHD, is characterized by three persistent patterns: inattention and or hyperactivity or impulsivity that interferes with the functioning or development of the individual. Now, ADHD is a real medical condition that can have a detrimental effect on children's daily lives and can continue into adulthood. Now, do you see any of these symptoms in your children? Constantly fidgets and squirms, has difficulty sitting still, playing quietly or relaxing, moving around constantly, often runs or climbs inappropriately, talks excessively, and may have a short temper, a short fuse. Now, if so, you don't want to miss today's show on Wellness for Life. We have Dr. David Hagedorn, a neurofeedback expert who's experienced in clinical health psychology, neuropsychology, and applied medical neuroscience. He's here to give us more insight on ADHD and how you can help your children today. Welcome, Dr. Hagedorn.
Well, thanks for having me today. It's appreciate you taking the time talking about this important topic that affects families, children, adults, high school, college students alike.
No doubt. You know, there are many children that are diagnosed with ADHD these days, but I believe there are also many that are misdiagnosed.
You are correct. This gets to the heart of the matter, is what is ADHD? We have a diagnostic or labeling system that looks at a bunch of behaviors and categorizes them and labels them as attention deficit with or without hyperactivity as a disorder. But that system doesn't pay close attention to looking at the reason why the brain is having trouble with attention or organization or good, clear decision making. And we need to think differently about ADHD as not just a known entity or a disease, but a label of behaviors. And we as clinicians need to work harder to find out why. And the reason for that is, go ahead.
What you're talking about is the root cause. I mean, there are so many, many different ways that you can get ADHD. I know for a fact in my practice, I treat a lot of allergies and environmental medicine conditions like multiple chemical sensitivities, and ADHD is definitely one of the symptoms.
That's correct. And it overlaps a lot of conditions, head injury being another fine example, and even things like deficiencies such as a magnesium or a zinc deficiency, because the body, the cells need certain elements to make things like dopamine, a critical neurotransmitter to help us pay attention, help our brain work well. So it's important that we don't just label a bunch of behaviors and symptoms and then treat it necessarily with a stimulant, but we think through why. Why is the person having trouble? Is it, as you say, an allergen that can cause the brain to have difficulty and an immune response that happens in the body, which affects cognitive function, or is it something else?
Right. Well, let's talk about some of those other hidden factors that can trigger these types of behaviors. Impulsivity. I've seen that a great deal in my practice, and often, like I was saying, just by changing the diet alone, getting rid of some of the neurotoxins such as dairy products and wheat products and food additives, things like that. What do you see? What are your findings that are some of these hidden triggers?
Yeah, and one of the things we see a lot, and I would say it's a majority of the cases of people that come in for an evaluation for ADHD, is there's often an autoimmune or subclinical inflammatory disease going on in the body, even the young children already. Can be from their enteric nervous system, which is their GI system, plays a critical role in brain function. And if a person has trouble absorbing nutrients, let's just pick magnesium, for example. If they can't pull the magnesium out of the foods, the magnesium-rich foods, because their GI system is not healthy, then it's not available then to help the body make energy, something called ATP, which is fuel for the cells. And therefore, they will look in school as if they just can't focus, drift off, feel like they're in a fog, and it'll appear to be ADHD. But really, the cause has to do with the lack of absorption of critical nutrients that the body needs.
You said something very clear. It has to do a lot with the gut. You know, and one of the areas that people are not realizing, and we are now getting more information out there, is about the microbiome. That the microbiome has a huge impact on how nutrients are extracted. They are our helpers, and they help us digest food down to the level of those micronutrients such as magnesium and zinc.
You bet. You said, well said. And unfortunately, a lot of times our diets in America in particular are not fully adequate for giving us magnesium-rich or other nutrient-rich foods, you know, things like avocados and tofu and beans, legumes, nuts. A lot of these foods are not in the everyday diet. Unfortunately, we're all very busy, and fast foods get in the way and really rob our bodies of its capability, because those foods are often quite deplete of the things the body needs, and they're quite heavy on things like sodium and sugars, which the
right.
body really doesn't need much of.
Right. You know, there's a condition called pyroluria. You're familiar with that, right?
Of course.
Yes, and pyroluria, you know, one of the key factors is zinc deficiency. Can you touch a little bit about that? Because I think that's another biomarker that's linked to ADHD.
Yeah, it is. And zinc is important. I mean, we think of it, you know, as that a lot of times we talk about it being in vitamins and foods, zinc-rich foods. And you could even do a zinc challenge test by something that every doctor could do in their office, even without a blood test. And that's important. But zinc supplementation can be useful in children, but we like to not supplement it necessarily unless we've tested to kind of see where their value, you know, where the current zinc level is. So it's not something that we would just summarily recommend if people start taking zinc, because it's the brain is more complicated than just one nutrient. But taking some zinc supplements for those who are deficient can really reduce hyperactivity and impulsivity rather quickly.
Right. I found that many of my patients who've got anxiety, I do a very simple urine test looking for those pyroles and actually looking for the zinc, if there's a zinc deficiency or not. And there's another B vitamin called B6 that is in combination that also contributes to that. So very easily treatable just by adding zinc. And of course, it's a therapeutic dose of zinc and B6, but you got to do it properly with a practitioner who understands that imbalance.
Yeah, that's right. And I'm so glad you said imbalance, because balance is what we shoot for. You know, there needs to be a zinc-copper ratio for proper balance. And you know, those who are interested in this area should, you know, there's plenty of information in books and on the internet that are pretty clear. And it's important to look at what we take into our body in balance and not to overshoot by starting to take a lot of zinc and a lot of magnesium, just because we're using those as examples today as a cure-all for ADD. And also just say in the outset, there are times when a psychostimulant is appropriate. It's not necessarily evil or terrible. Sometimes it's very, very important, and you balance the effects of a medication against not taking it. My point today is really for us to think more about the cause, the etiology of the inattention, lack of focus, and not just what to call it. Because we understand the etiology, we can target the treatment much more effectively. Another example, when we just move away from zinc, magnesium, copper for a moment, and move into trauma and stress and insomnia. So if you have a child who's having trouble sleeping because, say, their parents are fighting and they're worried about a divorce, you have a child that's distracted. You have a child that has a lot of anxiety that can be as a result of that, and then not sleeping well. Well, that combination in the school system will look just like ADHD, but clearly a stimulant is not the underlying reason for that child's problem. So we want to make a more careful, thoughtful evaluation whenever possible.
You mentioned that, yes, some people definitely need the stimulants that are available out there, that a lot of the children are actually taking quite a bit, as well as adults. But what do you think, just in ballpark, what the percentage really needs those stimulants as a medical prescription? What's the percentage?
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's a kind of loaded question, because I would say it's very, very small. And the reason a psychostimulant can be used is if a person just can't seem to have the time or the resources to look at these other etiologies, but we've seen a dramatic increase in the number of people diagnosed being put on that class of drug, and that, you know, I don't think the population is not necessarily genetically deteriorating to a point where we have an increased number of ADHD people in the world. I think it's more of our environmental changes and lack of time to focus on giving the body what it needs to help it focus, help the brain focus and pay attention and function more properly. I would say more likely we have inflammation causing these symptoms than a lack of dopamine receptors in the frontal portion of the brain, which is one of the reasons the drug was designed to try to help that. Those cases do exist, but I would say it's a very small percentage. And unfortunately, a lot of times if a person gets put on a stimulant, it does make a positive impact in many kids and adults as well to help them pay attention. But then they also have trouble with sleep because the medication can be activating as a side effect, in which case many, many people then put on a medication to counteract the side effects of the stimulant. And one class of medication put on to counteract the side effects of the stimulant is an antipsychotic. So mm-hmm. Now you're looking at a stimulant drug and an antipsychotic medication, and sometimes we even add a medication more specific to help induce sleep. So polypharmacy gets involved very, very quickly, and I think if we're a little more careful in looking at underlying mechanisms for the brain's difficulty with focus and attention, we can avert that type of treatment path.
Mm, right. I totally agree on that one. You know, you mentioned about inflammation causing the symptomatology and behavioral issues. And I know, within my practice in the environmental medicine space, toxicity is huge. Heavy metal toxicity, chemical exposures, phenolics, meaning like perfumes and chemicals that you smell, it goes right into the brain. And I can literally see a child change their behavior within seconds when they're exposed to these types of chemicals. Can you touch on that a little bit?
Sure, and not everyone is that sensitive to the environmental toxins. You know, chemicals that are in plastics and carpet fumes, a lot of chemicals in our foods. Not everyone is that sensitive. The body has a tremendous way of fighting off the bad guys, if you will, these chemicals, as a way of clearing it. But some people are more sensitive than others, and if you can get a certain, sometimes there's a tipping point. There's just too many toxins that hit a person, then it tips them over the edge and they start to have cognitive impairments, endocrine disorders, etc. So it's not that toxins are always a problem. They are problematic in some people more than others is how I would articulate it. But they're still toxic nonetheless, and we should try to avoid those. Even things like allergies, as you mentioned, food allergies, for example, that the body has to deal with and mobilize resources when it's being attacked and there's an immune response to an allergen. And that does degrade the person's ability to have intact cognitive functioning. So it'll appear, one of the first symptoms you'll see is lack of focus and attention. So yes, the environmental toxins, plastics, chemicals, perfumes, metals, all are things that we should at least look at in combination of a good history when trying to evaluate a person with inattention and hyperactivity.
Mm, great point. You know, I've used CBD oil quite a bit for my patients who have ADHD and anxiety, and we've got some really good results, really good results. Do you recommend that?
Yeah, no, it's getting a lot of press, and we do use it. It's a good anti-inflammatory. It's a little pricey. Not everyone can afford it, unfortunately. So, you know, some of the things we look at is what can we, else can we do that's an anti-inflammatory agent and has an anti-anxiety component too. So if the CBD oil, if you can, if a person can't afford that because it can be expensive, there are other ways of approaching it with similar things like taking turmeric or curcumin, and we can, that can be done dietarily, and also can be, it's also available in pill form. Also, other ways to handle anxiety could be things like heart rate variability biofeedback that helps engage the parasympathetic or the rest, the digest part of the autonomic nervous system. So there's, and things like L-theanine can be helpful, and GABA can be helpful, and magnesium can be helpful with anxiety. So there are some less expensive ways to try to get at the same underlying causes, which you've found wisely that is often the case with people with ADD and hyperactivity, and that is anxiety and inflammation. So there are a couple ways of going after it, and you know, certainly CBD oil is one option. It does, in many cases, increase the THC level. So people need to be mindful of that. But it has a lot of application. I think more and more research is showing that it's a valuable tool in the toolbox for the physician.
Yes, you mentioned biofeedback. And I'd like to know, you know, let's talk a little bit about how we can use biofeedback for ADHD children.
Sure. So there's two, think of biofeedback as something as simple as if you were looking down at a bathroom scale and you're standing on it, you are given a number. That is a form of feedback about your biology. Another example would be taking your finger temperature, putting a thermistor on your finger and measuring your temperature. That is physiologic feedback that's instantaneous about what's going on in your body. Biofeedback, and the one I mentioned a moment ago is called heart rate variability biofeedback, is a way of giving you data about your heart rate variability. And when you can see it, you can learn to change it. And it has been shown in many studies to be very, very effective for anxiety, depression, and other conditions, asthma included. So heart rate variability is inexpensive, very easy to use at home. Another type of biofeedback is where you actually are training the brain itself by looking at the electrical activity from the brain called the EEG. And this type of biofeedback called EEG biofeedback, or by its other name, neurofeedback, has been shown in many, many studies, double-blind placebo-controlled trial studies, and through many meta-analysis studies, to be a level 5 efficacy for ADHD. In fact, I'll go as far as to say that if you have a person with ADHD, I think neurofeedback should be a first-line intervention because it is non-invasive, it is easy to learn and do, and it has a tremendous amount of efficacy data. And you don't have to worry about drug side effects with this. So it's underutilized, unfortunately. But there's more and more tools become making it less expensive, and even now there's technology available where you can do it at home. And Kinetic Neuroscience has a program where people can access that for home training, so making it very affordable and easy.
Oh, that's great to know here. Where can people find more about your information?
Yeah, kineticneuroscience.com is one location that is targeting ADHD, helping people have tools for home use, and it can be used in conjunction with standard medical care using medications and types of psychotherapy. So it's an adjunct home training, an add-on, and it's always good to have a physician involved in a decision-making and the care, so you have sort of a quarterback with the skills and training to help guide this type of home training.
Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much, Dr. Hagedorn. I wish we had more time to talk about all this. There's so much great information. Okay, Kinetic Neuro, right? Neuroscience. Kinetic Neuroscience.
That's right. Kinetic Neuroscience is taking aim at the truth about ADHD and helping people address it at home at their leisure.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Okay. Thanks so much for listening to the show today. And if you've learned something new that will help you reach ultimate wellness, please share this show with your friends and family. And you can go to iTunes and give us some of your feedback. The support will be greatly appreciated. Do connect with me on Instagram or Facebook. And if you need guidance or want to dig deeper into your chronic health issue, I take care of things through phone and Skype consultations with people all around the world. Just go to my website, drsuzanne.com, for my contact info. Until next time, go out there and live your best life today, full of energy, enthusiasm, and ultimate health and wellness. This is Dr. Suzanne sharing natural strategies on the Wellness for Life show right here on Radio MD. Stay well.